And that's one of the things for me personally when I'm practicing it. And don't get me wrong, when I'm in that hold as a practitioner, I'm feeling the same things and thinking, okay, how much longer can I actually hold my arms up here? But the thing I've always loved about it is there is always more.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of the Mother of Reinvention show. I'm Megan Francis, your host, and in this podcast, I talk to inspiring women about reinventions they've faced, from career pivots to kids getting older to divorce to personal journeys of every stripe. And I share my thoughts on how to face whatever's next with more adventure and courage. If you've been following along with my journey over the past few years, you probably already know that yoga has played a big role in my personal reinvention story. I was actually introduced to yoga pretty young. My mom had an amazing Raquel Welch yoga book, hands up if you remember that one, and I still think about it all the time, to be honest. I took my first class when I was about 20, and I've practiced on and off ever since, really ramping up around the time I got divorced in 2017. Then, a little over 2 years ago, I was going through a really devastating breakup, and I decided to sign up for a yoga challenge at my local studio, Yoga Life. I managed to take 60 classes in 2 months. And let me add that that was January and February, so they were not even full. It was not even a full 60 days. And just knowing that I was capable of pulling that off was life-changing. Today's guest, Lisa Seeger, was a big part of that experience for me. Lisa is an instructor at Yoga Life, and while I've always loved her classes, I was really excited for the opportunity to get to know her better and to hear her reinvention story, which actually coincides pretty closely with mine. We were both going through divorce around the same time, and then she started her journey toward becoming a yoga instructor right around the time I was starting to practice at the studio more regularly. So this was really a fun interview for me because I got a chance to talk to a mother of reinvention I admire in my own local world and find out a lot more about her journey. Today, we're talking about everything from dealing with out-of-control feelings and white-knuckling life, perfectionism, how Lisa's journey has helped her embrace her 50s and see her body and health in a totally new way, and in her words, how yoga has given her a life. We'll be right back with my interview with Lisa Seeger, but first, I want to take a quick break to talk to you about our sponsor, PrepDish. PrepDish is a subscription meal planning and menu service that makes it really easy to plan and prep meals for the whole week all at once. Every week, founder Allison sends you 4 complete menus, keto, paleo, gluten-free, and super fast, to your email, along with recipes and a grocery list. So the idea is that you prep the whole week's worth of meals all at once, and then when you're ready to make dinner, you pull out the ingredients, they're already prepped and ready to go, and you're on your way. The meals are delicious, and I love how easily they come together when I'm ready to get dinner on the table. For a free 2-week trial, go to prepdish.com/more, that's M-O-R. Again, just head to prepdish.com/M-O-R to try PrepDish free for 2 weeks.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, Megan. How are you?
I am doing great. I'm really excited about this interview. I have to say, I'm just really happy that you said yes, which is kind of like fun because I'm not often in that position where I'm like fangirling over someone in my community. So it's kind of fun. I'm really glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be here. So thanks for inviting me.
Of course. Okay, so I already set this up in the intro, but just so that everyone listening knows, you've been teaching yoga about the same amount of time, I think, or at least you've been kind of in the milieu, kind of around the same amount of time as I have been, only not as an instructor. And then also we both were going through divorces around the same time. So there's like a lot of synergy here. So I want you to back up. Just to like, I think you said 2015 was when you first started going through your divorce process. Things sounded like they were getting kind of ugly. And this is when you discovered yoga. So just kind of take us through that process.
Yeah. So I, at the time, I was feeling a bit out of control, as I'm sure you can relate to. And I was working out a lot. A lot of cardio, a lot of weightlifting, really almost obsessively.
Okay.
And I had a girlfriend who suggested that I go to a yoga class with her. And so I went and at first I really connected with it because it was a physical practice. And I thought, well, this is great. You know, I can really incorporate this into all of this working out where I'm channeling all of this excess energy. And towards the end of the class, of course, when we start slowing things down and moving into finishings and then heading into Shavasana, things started getting, you know, a little bit strange for me. And I'm like, this is kind of weird, you know, where's the cool down and a more traditional workout type of thing. And then the kinds of things that the instructor was saying, kind of directness inward. And initially I thought this is not for me. Okay. And then partway through, you know, as she's leading us into Shavasana, which, you know, is the end, the corpse pose, kind of where we're coming to our internal selves. And I just realized I had tears running down both cheeks. Mm-hmm. And I just really thought, wow, whatever this is that's, you know, kind of reaching into me, it feels really tough, but also really good. And I just kept going back for that. And it really grew from there.
Okay. So I love this for a lot of reasons. First of all, this was your first exposure to yoga. You had not done it at all throughout the years until that moment?
No, this was it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I also found myself inexplicably crying on the mat kind of a lot at the beginning. And I'm wondering if that's a common, I thought I was kind of a weirdo, but like, I wonder if that's more of a common thing than I thought at the time. And sometimes it was very like unexpected. I didn't know where it was coming from. It just happened.
Yes. And I think the same thing. I think it is more common, especially as you're starting to connect to a deeper level of yourself. And really, I think if you're going through something or if you've been through something traumatic, I think it really just brings up these pieces of you that you may be pushed down. You know, you don't want to deal with certain things. You want to stay very tough, very strong for your children or for work or whatever reasons you feel like you have to compartmentalize. And I would say that, I mean, that was definitely not the last time I cried in Shavasana. I probably, for a solid year, every time I would get into Shavasana, I would begin crying. I think it's just this really deep release where you can just let go and be yourself. And I actually found myself just a few weeks ago just crying, you know, and again, I feel like I'm in a really well-adjusted place personally. But there was just something about the process, the flow, and then coming into that space. And there was just something still within me that was touched and just had to work its way out in that emotion. So,
wow. Okay. And the other thing I love about what you've said so far is that it sounds like the part of yoga you really needed was the part that didn't come naturally to you, that wasn't easy for you, which for you was the slowing down. And I think a lot of students would have the opposite experience, that like, the slow part might be easier, the tapping in part might feel easier, but the physical asanas are hard. So like, I'm just curious if you find that to be like the thing you bring to it, you need the other thing, and that's what draws you to that practice.
Yes, I would totally agree with that. And, you know, since I've started practicing and came from a place where I wanted to be very powerful, I wanted to sweat, I wanted to feel it in my physical body. You know, I wanted all of these pieces that felt like a workout. And since then, from a student, a practitioner, and then to an instructor, I have totally reversed this. And, you know, now I teach restorative classes where all I want you to do is slow down and lay down and think, you know, and feel. And so it's just been a real process for me to feel like I guess for me, it felt like I was a little bit out of control when I started crying in Shavasana, or when somebody started speaking to things that I was feeling in my spirit, that was really difficult for me to face. And then now it's like, I just crave it. I just want more of that.
I love that. And that feels like that's really where the transformation is, because if we just did the things that came naturally or that we wanted to do, that's not a practice, right? That's
right.
That's
exactly
what a practice is. Yeah. I also, I can so identify with the part about wanting to be in control of something. And I remember you saying in a class not too long ago, you mentioned your obsessive working out when you were going through your divorce and how you just wanted to feel like you could control something. And that was something you could control. And for me, it was going to the car wash. Like I remember, I was never someone who had a clean car, like ever. And I would sometimes go to the car wash twice a day. Like I had a, unlimited membership, but I thought, well, I can't control anything, but I can have a clean car. And I think when you're in that place where everything is spinning, you're just grasping for something, something to hold on to. And it sounds like maybe you weren't finding it in the more physical, like you wanted it. It seemed like you were getting there, but it was outside your grasp in the more physical fitness classes.
Yes, I would completely agree with that. I was getting at the time what I thought I needed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, if somebody else hadn't kind of recognized that in me, that maybe I needed that other piece and, you know, encourage this transition, I don't know. You know, I think that, you know, we all follow the path that we're supposed to. So would I have found yoga? Yes. But would I have found it maybe in such a timely space in my life? I don't know. You know, I just, somebody who was close to me just said, you know, I think this might be good for you. And it was.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, so you kind of gave us a little bit of the story of where you were. You were going through this, I think you said acrimonious, or it was a difficult divorce, and you discover yoga. So kind of give us like a glimpse at what your life looked like then, and then how this has transformed to where we are now. Cause now we're 6 years later. What has that journey been like?
So it was difficult at first, you know, to really decide to dedicate time to myself. At the time, I think my children were 13 and 16, maybe. And so I was still really in the throes of, you know, being their primary caregiver and sacrificing myself to make sure that, you know, they were okay, just in general, in just regular adolescence. And then, you know, you throw a separation and a divorce, and later, you know, their father actually ended up, you know, he passed away. And it was this time that I was kind of transitioning from all of my energy being in, you know, caring for this family, to deciding that, okay, I actually need to give myself something, or I'm just going to disappear. Which I think a lot of women find that as their kids are reaching an age where suddenly they don't need them quite as much.
Right.
And you have to start, you have to start looking for something else. So, I just kind of connected. I almost became obsessive about yoga then at that point, because of course I was still working things out and needed that obsessive focus at that time. So started going to classes, you know, multiple times a week, and really trying to deepen that practice. And I think even, you know, I think I started out doing yoga in a gym at South Shore, which was a great place to practice, but it was a gym. And so even then you still have, you know, a lot of the physical aspect of it. So I think it wasn't until I overheard some people after class talking. One of the girls actually trained at Yoga Life where I work, and I heard them talking and realized, oh, I can do a teacher training right here in St. Joe. There's the yoga studio right here in St. Joe. Right. And so then I transitioned that practice to a yoga studio, which was just a completely different vibe, because now it's really just focused on, you know, the eight limbs of the practice and really looking at both the spiritual side and the physical side. And, you know, that just opened a whole new world to me.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because I think that a lot of people listening probably have only been exposed to yoga in a gym setting, or maybe like in 20-minute videos where you're really just doing the physical practice. And I know even for myself, and I had been exposed for many years, but really Yoga Life was a totally different experience for me because of how consistent, I guess, it was. Or like, you just, no matter whose class you're in, you get the feeling that everyone's on like a journey with the same, like they're following the same book or something. And I think that those are two very different things. So let's talk about sort of the westernized version of yoga, which is great. It's a great physical practice. Sometimes it'll tap in a little bit, like a little bit to mindfulness, or like there's a little taste of it. But something like where you're working, it's very different. And so yes. I would just love to hear you talk about what that going deeper in that journey looks like and how different the experience is both for you as a teacher, but also for the student, for anyone who hasn't experienced that.
So at the gym, and again, they have some wonderful instructors there. In fact, some of the instructors that work there were actually trained in Yoga Life.
Yeah.
So they do take some of that philosophy with them, but there is that fine line between, you know, who's here for what, you know, right. They're at the gym. They're probably here for more physical practice. There's glass. So everyone can look in, you know, everybody right. lifting weights is watching. There's mirrors everywhere. So you can't help but look at yourself, which again, then you're trying to perfect your physical form because you can see yourself in the mirror and that doesn't look like the person next to me. And so I think there's a very, it's distracting to an extent in many ways. You're really looking outward. Where when you go into a studio that's dedicated to teaching yoga and really teaching yoga from a philosophy point of view. And it's interesting when you say we're all on the same journey, because even we notice as instructors, I might teach something on a Thursday and then go to a class on Friday and the instructor is teaching something very similar. And then on Saturday, again, it's very similar where none of us were in the other classes.
Right.
But there's this general energy that's being created by not only the instructors, but the students that are coming in. And we really are all connecting on the same vibe. And it really just flows from, you know, from class to class. I really feel like it does. And I think being, you know, having that little bit of deeper philosophy and that deeper dive, we do all end up having this connection that really we can all start to relate to on some level within ourselves.
Yeah, that really is the difference. And like you said, there are classes in gyms that are taught by great instructors who may also be teaching at a studio, but probably the way they're going to teach at the gym is just different because they have to meet yes. people where they are and give them what they came for. And it's so,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
So if anyone's dabbling, I would highly recommend finding a studio in your area that is more cohesive. I think it's that cohesion of intent that that I think is really helpful. And one of the things that I think is pretty common, but something that I had not been exposed to before Yoga Life, was this idea that every month there's going to be a theme. And I know we're just finishing up the month where it was Brahmacharya. Did I pronounce that
yes.
correctly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what I loved is hearing all the different instructors kind of have a slightly different take on this. So, and at least I'll let you talk more about it, but it's, the idea is, well, I've heard non-excess or right use of energy, right? So it could mean not being excessively doing too much, but it could also be not excessively not doing enough, right? So I would love to hear just like how something like that plays out when you're going through a whole month teaching several times a week, concentrating on a theme, and you can use Brahmacharya as an example. How does that play into your life as you're teaching it?
Oh, I mean, I think it absolutely becomes, you know, the focus that you're in tune to. It is really great. I mean, we've been doing this, you know, since before we came to the new studio. We follow the yamas and niyamas, and we just go from month to month to the next one.
So and, stop really quick and explain what a yama and a niyama is.
The yamas and the niyamas, they're kind of like the jewels of yoga philosophy. Not to get biblical, but I kind of think of them very similar to something most people are familiar with, the Ten Commandments, mm-hmm. Because they do. They're just the basic human kindnesses. But also then these kindnesses that you show yourself first. So, you know, we start with ahimsa or nonviolence and then move into truth and then move into non-excess and all of these things as we go through. And each one, I believe, builds on the last one. So as you mentioned, you know, we've been practicing in February Brahmacharya, which is non-excess. Celibacy is actually a translation that is often said. We've been talking a lot this time around about the correct use of your energy. And yeah, so when that becomes our focus, I always go back and it's a great refresher to go back and then read that chapter in this great book that we all kind of reference. It's by Deborah Adele, and just kind of put this back in perspective with your life and build off of this. And I really think that if we're not as instructors, if we're just walking in and saying, oh, brahmacharya, it sounds good. This is, listen to my Sanskrit. It's so perfect. But without actually going that step back and saying, yes, I've read this chapter, 10 times. I want to read it again. I want to tap into this, because if I'm not actually bringing it into my life, it's going to show in my teaching, and it's people will tune out, because if it's not authentic, then, it's not going to help anybody, first myself, and then anybody that I'm trying to give that message to. So definitely it translates over into our personal lives, our professional lives. It's not just the day we walk into the studio to teach that class.
So this makes me, this brings me to a question I've had, and I'm putting myself in a position of being the instructor and thinking, how much of what I would be teaching as I'm talking through these themes, and as I'm just talking about my life, like how much of what you're teaching to your students are the things that you really needed to hear at one point, or maybe still do? Are you instructing yourself as you go?
I think 100% all the time for me.
Okay.
It truly is. Sometimes it's not rehearsed. So how I kind of approach classes is, at some point during the day, before I know I'm headed to the studio, I'll start thinking about things. Mm. I'll start thinking about brahmacharya, or sometimes it's not even actually, the theme that we're focusing on, our focus for the month. It might just be something else that I think, how would other people relate to this? This happened to me today. How would somebody else relate to this if I spoke to this? And so it kind of starts there with this bit of a conversation in my head, just to say, if does anybody else need to hear this? And then I kind of show up at the studio a little bit early. I walk into the studio, roll out my mat, and I move. Mm-hmm. And I just see where that takes me very organically. And I think, this kind of feels good. I wonder if this would feel good for anybody else. And then kind of having all of that in mind, then I walk in and, feel the vibe. What is the energy that everybody's bringing? Kind of see how people are settling in, tap into how they're breathing. And then it just really grows from there. But almost every time when it's over, I'll think, wow, I don't know where that came from, but it must have been something that I needed to say. And yes, for as much for myself as maybe, hopefully that spoke to at least one person in this room, or a piece of it spoke to somebody in this room. So yeah, it definitely comes from somewhere deep. And so I believe that, yes, it's not only what I need to say to someone else, but for some reason, I need to hear it said out loud.
I love that. Okay, Lisa, we're going to take a quick break. And then we're going to get back. And I want to talk, we talked about what your life was like 6 years ago. I want to talk about what it's like now and how yoga has played a part in that.
Friends, it is almost summer shoe season here in Michigan. Okay, maybe not almost, but I am really looking forward to it, especially because this summer I plan to be sporting cute sandals and wedges from our sponsor, Vionic Shoes. I have been wearing Vionic Shoes for about a year now, and I just can't get over how ridiculously comfortable this footwear is. I have several pair of Vionic boots and my favorite Boss Lady loafers, the Woola Flat in this amazing blue suede. But now I'm also eyeballing their collection of sandals and wedges, and it's going to be hard to narrow this down, but I already have the Amy Wedge sandal in Marsala in my cart. I often have kind of a hard time wearing heels because they're just not comfortable on my feet, but I already know that Vionic has got comfort completely figured out with their three-zone comfort, which features stability, cushioning, and amazing arch support. Seriously, every pair of Vionics I put on makes me go, ah, and I can't wait to strut around in a cute and comfy pair of Vionic wedges this summer. There's a 30-day wear test, so you can return for a full refund within 30 days if you aren't satisfied for any reason, even if you've worn them outside. Go to VionicShoes.com and use promo code MORE, that's M-O-R, like Mother of Reinvention, to get free shipping on your pair of Vionics. Again, that's VionicShoes.com and use the promo code MOR for free shipping. Hey, a quick note, everyone. If you're curious about how I completely transitioned my yoga practice from studio to home over the past year, including practicing nearly every day and completing another yoga life challenge in January and February of this year, head over to my blog. I've got two articles up. One is about why and how to establish a home practice, and another one is all about the props I use to make that spot at the end of my bed feel more like a real yoga studio. Also, I would love for you to practice yoga with me, and you can do that by signing up for virtual classes at my home studio, Yoga Life. So I will put a link to all that content and Yoga Life's website in the show notes for this episode at motherofreinventionshow.com. And you can also just find all my blog content at meganfrancis.com. That's meaganfrancis.com. Check it out.
Okay, so I'm here with Lisa Seeger, and we have been talking all about her transformation into this, from having this very out of control life into something where she kind of had to let go of some of that control. And part of that was definitely her yoga practice. And we're going to get into that more in a minute here. But first, I want to kind of catch listeners up, because you were talking about what life was like for you in 2015. And in 2015, you were going to the gym all the time, and I was going to the car wash all the time. And, you know, we were both like trying to control some part of our lives. And then you discovered yoga and eventually decided to become an instructor. What year did you go through that training?
So I started, I guess it was 2016 that I started, the very end of 2016. It had been a rough 12 months. I had signed up for training actually early in 2016, anticipating the training in the fall. And really, as it got closer, there had been some real major changes in my life and my children's lives. And I really contemplated not doing it. And something just kept saying, no, this is what you should be doing. And so I entered teacher training, not even sure if I would ever teach, knowing I really loved yoga. Mm. I thought I could teach yoga, but really, I think it was something that had to be done again, because it is such a deeper dive into the theory. And I think that at that time in my life, it was almost like therapy for me. Mm. Like I was going in, and I know, not to confuse that, I know yoga therapy is a real thing. So this was not a therapeutic training, but for me, it was something that I really needed to get into that deeper dive, just to repair myself,
yeah.
You know, just for me at that time, just practicing was great, but I really needed more. So at the end of 2016, through the fall, I participated in the training, and then, I think it was early 2017. I started working at the studio teaching my first class.
And that was, were we still in that tiny little space then?
We were still in the tiny little space then.
Yes. Okay. I think I started going there in 2016, which was when I was really kind of in the middle of my divorce. So we probably crossed paths many times in that little space. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, the theme for this first season of the show is sisu. And that's a Finnish word for courage, resilience, grit. It means a lot of different things. But I would love to hear how your yoga practice really helped you tap into that, your resilience, your sisu, your courage, because this has been a huge season of reinvention for you. Like everything is different now. Oh. You're remarried and your kids have gotten older and you're now a yoga instructor. So some of that, I mean, I think it's interesting how sometimes we think of it as just like powering through, but there's a subtler kind of resilience, right? So I would just love to hear you talk about how that's played out in your life.
So, yeah, I think there's been a huge transition from I have to power through everything to I just need to let everything be because it's all going to unfold as it should. And I still, I still have a hard time with that. I still, have those moments where I like things a certain way, or I want things done this way, or I want things done right now. So it's still, it's still a practice for me. But I definitely learned to let go. Mm. I learned more who I was. I was wearing a lot of masks. Mm. I was constantly reinventing myself back then, but not in a healthy way for me. It was always to, who am I around? Okay, this is who they know, or this is who they know. And I think that it was almost like an emergence of myself. And not only was that necessary for me, but I think it's been really healthy for my children to see and to actually get to know me as they kind of transitioned into adulthood to be able to see me as, oh, this isn't just mom. This is an actual human who has kind of found herself and is really putting her authentic self out there. And that's really, that has come from yoga. That has come from that mindfulness, which is such a hot topic word again right now, but it's true. This mindfulness, this turning more inward and really discovering, what do I like? What don't I like? What feels natural to me? How can I speak my truth and be okay that maybe not everybody likes me anymore? You know, some of those things. So I think yoga has just been key in, you know, I mean, I'm a big believer, if things are bad, breathe. Take 30 seconds and breathe and see if you can turn it around and look at it from a different perspective. And that's really come from my practice.
And I love that I think you're right that what we often think of as resilience, it looks a lot like white knuckling. But for you, it took a different kind of courage to not do that. Like a different kind of tapping into your strength to say, I'm not going to white knuckle life and I'm just going to kind of let it happen and flow with it. And that's for many, I mean, it's like, there's like opposite sides of the spectrum, but I think a lot of us find like unity in the idea that we're all trying to control something.
Right.
Maybe not the same thing, but something. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's just, you know, I mean, and you know, that's ego, which of course ego can be very important to us. You know, ego gets us out of bed and has us go to work, but ego also keeps us competing against everybody and, you know, stressed out all the time because we're not doing enough. So to find that balance and like I said, it's still a practice every day, you know, I may have that 30 seconds of road rage, but then that 30 seconds of breath says that this isn't going to steal my peace, right. You know, and that's part of the practice. And I think that's lifetime. I think, you know, very few of us get to that place in this lifetime where we have this enlightenment all the time. Right. You know, rather I have these tiny moments of enlightenment and that's what I build on. And that's what I hold on to. And then I do notice, but when you become aware, you notice, okay, these are growing a little bit. These moments are happening more and more, and I'm less reactive and I'm less, you know, I'm less white knuckling, like you said. And I think too, sometimes people think go with the flow means that you're just kind of kicked back and whatever. And it's definitely not that. It's knowing that, you know, you can set your goals, you can make your plans, you can have your dreams, but you can't fight the universe. So, you know, you can set these things in motion. You can work hard, but if you don't learn to go with the flow, you're often going to be coming up against roadblocks that will, you know, leave you very stressed out.
Yeah. When you told me that you have a regular job, and this is just one of those things that I think, and I want to hear more about the job in a second, but I think this is one of those misconceptions that people have. It's like when you're a kid and you would see your teacher out in the real world and you'd be like, oh, my teacher is a human. Like they leave the school. So
yes.
You told me you have a job as a nurse. And I was just surprised because the presence that you have in the studio would make it seem to me like you just live there all the time. Like I thought when I left there, you just stayed, you like sleep on your mat and everything. So you've already talked about how yoga really helped you through a really difficult transition in your life. But you told me before the interview that yoga really saved your life and now you use it to make a life while at the same time you're making a living with this very demanding job. So tell us about that job a little bit and how you actually swing between those two worlds, because I imagine it's almost like culture shock, like very different environments.
It really is a culture shock. That's really a great way to put it. And yeah, so I am a nurse. I've been a nurse for 25 years. And I honestly think, again, that yoga has helped that. You know, I think I told you, you know, nurses my age who've been a nurse this long, you know, many of the people in my department have been there a long time. And we're all, especially now and this time, we're really all facing a lot of burnout. And it's very fast paced. It's very detail oriented. You've got, you know, you're basically a caregiver for, and in our jobs, my job and specifically and my department, we're in home care. So it's not like we see somebody for a 12-hour shift and then we're gone and they're discharged. We are with them for, you know, a lengthy amount of time. And it does take up a lot of energy. And so it's, you know, even after working. So, you know, for example, Thursdays when I teach early in the, you know, late afternoon, early evening, I am up, I'm working, I'm moving, I'm doing all this stuff. And then I'm coming into the studio. And on one hand, it can be exhausting. But when you walk in, it's exhilarating and calming all at the same time, because it does feel like it's like, oh, I'm home now. Right. I'm home. I can take a breath and I can leave all that behind. And not to say that nursing isn't rewarding, because it is, but it takes a lot out of you. And I think if you're a mom, you know that caregiver mentality. And when that's your life at home and that's also your life at work, it's a lot of caregiving. It's a lot of giving your energy to somebody else to kind of lift them up. So it's been a wonderful career for me. It's allowed me to make a living and contribute to supporting my family. But it's yoga gives me a life. Yoga really does, because yoga is not a job. You know, I never think, oh, I'm going to work. I think I get to go teach yoga and I get to spend time with these people and we get to share our energy. And that's really renewing, whether you're teaching the class or whether you're taking the class. I feel like that give and take of energy is just really beneficial for everyone.
I'm glad you mentioned your age so that I didn't have to be the first. So when I had emailed you, and I think you said something, I said something like, you're around my age. And you said something like, oh, that's so kind of you. I'm 52. Now here's the thing. On all honesty, I did know you were a couple of years older than me, but I would never have said 52. So I would have, I really was thinking, oh, you know, like maybe like mid 40s. So that leads me to is, wow, you look fantastic. But it's it's still that very like just rolled off the mat fantastic. And I'm wondering if you feel now at 52, I know you were a super hard workout person, and maybe, you know, at 42, maybe you were more buff or maybe, you know, whatever, things happen, your body changes, but do you feel healthier in some ways? Like, how do you feel at 52? And I don't want you to necessarily compare against other eras of your life unless it's helpful, but I'm just wondering, like, if you actually feel as healthy as you look on the outside, because you really do radiate youth, honestly. And I don't know, maybe it's not youth, maybe it's just, like a vibrance that we assign to youth, which is unfortunate that we do that. But I know as a woman who's like 43, I'm becoming a little obsessive about how I might look at some point. So I want to hear it all. Tell me it all, Lisa.
Yeah. And I honestly think, I think that I feel, I probably am. So I'm probably not in the best physical shape that I've been in my life. You know, I'm probably not the strongest or the most toned, you know, in all the quote right places, but I feel the best that I've been. And I think a huge part of that is because, I don't want to say I don't care, like it's no big deal, but I don't care as much. You know, I've stopped weighing myself. I've stopped obsessively looking in the mirror. I've kind of stopped doing those things that I know I did in my 20s and 30s and even into my early 40s, because I had this idea of how I had to look. And then this is the thing that I kind of figured out just about, it's been really just about a year. Nobody is looking at me as hard as I'm looking at myself, you know? Right? Nobody remembers what I wore out to dinner last Friday. Nobody remembers what yoga pants I had on yesterday. nobody remembers me that vividly because we all have our own things going on. And as soon as I realized that, I think it really took a huge weight off is, yes, I want to be healthy. I want to stay vibrant because I want to, as I do get older, I want to be somebody who is physically capable and mentally capable for as long as I can actually hold on to that. But I think it's more that I don't care as much what somebody else thinks about me the way I just think about what I think about me. And yeah. I think I'm okay, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think you're so right that nobody's paying that close of attention. Right. I now have this little thing under my chin, you know, like right where your neck and your chin meet. And I don't even know what you would call it, like where the skin starts to go a little slack, right? Yes. And I can't stop looking at it. Like every time I'm brushing my teeth and I see my, you know, my jawline clench and then it pops out, I'm like, ugh. But then I think if that was my friend, I would glance at it and think, oh, that's new. And then I'd never think about it again. Like, I wouldn't even put any judgment on it. It would just be, huh.
And, you know? And that's exactly it. And that's huge. And I feel that same way. Like, I have girlfriends of varying ages and shapes and sizes. And when I see them, I think they're all beautiful. You know, there's no part of me that's judging any part of them. I just think they're beautiful women. And so I realized anybody who looks at me and tries to maybe pick something apart, that doesn't have any impact on my life.
Right.
So, you know, like I said, I want to be healthy. I try to eat right. I try to use, you know, when I do use skin products or makeup, I try to get things that are, you know, healthier variations. So I know what I'm putting on my skin. I know what I'm putting into my body. I do try to be physically active. But it's not an obsessiveness to look a certain way anymore. It's just, I just want to feel good.
Yeah. And you want to be able to go now into the next 2, 3, 4, however many decades of life you've got left. We could have all be living to 200 in the next, you know, few decades.
Yeah.
You want to be able to do stuff and like live life and
Yeah. And I think my job as a nurse probably impacts that as well, because I do, you know, I work with a homebound population. People are homebound for a reason. And I see, you know, what maybe some poor lifestyle choices might have, how those might have impacted where they are now in their health.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go down that road. You know, I want to be self-sufficient for as long as I can, both physically and mentally. So.
Okay, Lisa. So we have talked a lot about you and your life and how you found yoga and then became an instructor and just the impact that yoga and instructing yoga has had on your life. And now we're going to talk about, this is where it dovetails with where my experience with you has come in, because I've mostly known you as a yoga instructor whose classes I like to go to. And I just want to talk about a little bit about all that. But before I start asking you, putting you on the spot and grilling you, I just would like to know, like, do you feel like every yoga instructor, I mean, I'm sure you'll say yes to this, but has a particular style? And then if so, like, how does that emerge? Did you go into yoga in teacher training thinking, this is the kind of teacher I'm going to be? Or did that organically come out?
I think it organically came out. And this is something that I remember saying this as we were going through teacher training, because it is an immense amount of information that you're given and you're trying to process it. And you're really thinking, I don't think I can ever do this. I'm kind of an introverted person by nature. I don't seek out a lot of new friends. When I'm with friends that I've got friends for 25 years, they tend to lead or initiate the conversations. And if I don't really have something that I feel like I contribute, I don't really jump in there. So I almost couldn't even see myself doing it. But what I kind of remember when everybody was saying, how are we going to do this, is I didn't know what I was doing when I went to nursing school either.
Right.
And I learned once I learned all of the technical parts of being a nurse, then I started being a nurse and I learned how to do it. And then that came out. And I think it's the same as with being an instructor. You know, I think at first, our instructor, our kind of our leader, our mentor there at Yoga Life is Brooke Margerone. And I think at first, when we come out of a training with Brooke, we all sound like little Brooks because, yes. You know, we've watched her, we've practiced with her, we've heard her words. And so those are the words that are coming out of our mouths for probably a good, you know, 4 to 6 months. That's all we're just regurgitating back what we know she would say. And then for myself, I know that once that kind of, that was kind of passing. And of course, Brooke's always a mentor to me. I'm always listening to what she's saying in class, but, you know, then I started going to a lot of, you know, maybe Cordelia's classes and thinking, oh, I should probably teach more like Cordelia. So there really is this thing where you're like, I should teach more like Brooke. I should teach more like Cord. You know, I should teach more like whatever. And then eventually you start hearing your own voice come through and you're like, hey, I guess I'm teaching like me and I'm taking the best pieces of those people, which I think we do in life too. I think we pick up the best pieces of the people that we love and we surround ourselves with. And then we start picking up some of their qualities and merging those into our own qualities. So I think that's kind of how that grew. I think it grows more organically for me. But from that definite base of this is my teacher's voice. And, you know, this is someone else that I love her style of teaching and I love taking her classes. And I kind of, you know, intentionally incorporated their pieces until their pieces merged with my pieces and my own style came out.
I love that because when you're first starting, of course, my sister is going through yoga teacher training right now with, at Hilltop in, so who was the teacher who taught Brooke, right? So
yes.
My sister, every weekend she gets to the end of her training and she's just like, I don't even know if I like yoga anymore. But I mean, she loves it, but she's exhausted. She's just mentally so overloaded. And she made the point to me, like, or a comment, like, how will I turn this into me? And I think because you're so overloaded, like you said, so overwhelmed, so much information, it makes so much sense that you would just say, okay, well, what Brooke is doing works. So I'm just going to do that. Like, and then eventually you get confident and your own style comes through. And I definitely think in your classes that I've taken, I definitely feel your style. And it's funny that I just finished up the yoga challenge today at Yoga Life, which is a challenge that happens in January and February at the studio. And I intentionally finished it on a Cordelia class because I usually avoid Cordelia's classes because they're hard.
They are hard.
Because she's very into the physical exertion, right?
Yes. Yeah. I was her demo student Tuesday night, which I almost never do. And when we left there, I looked at her and I said, there was a moment there where I really don't want to be your friend anymore. There was a moment there where I didn't want to do what you were having us do. And she just left. And yes, she is very challenging. Wonderful.
Yes.
But her classes are challenging. So I'm glad that you do that because I think a lot of people do avoid the hard stuff. And I think it's good for us to get a mixture of all that stuff.
Exactly. So, and that's why I very intentionally decided that's the last class I'm going to do before I complete the challenge. Because that's how I want to, like, not like I'm going out leaving yoga, but I just wanted to say this, I can do this. I can show up to these hard classes and do it. And you know, we can do hard things, right? So now I'm going to I'm going to tap into two things that you do in your classes that are the moment where I'm not sure I want to be your yoga friend anymore. So, and this is all in, I pick your classes as often as I can, Lisa. I love your classes. So this is all in like good fun. But one of them is your saying, can you stay? Please tell me about this because you say it a lot and I always feel convicted in the moment because I know I can stay, but I don't want to. So is this one of those where it came out of your sense of yourself and what you'd be thinking at that moment? Or were you looking around seeing everyone pop their leg up out of Warrior Two or whatever and going, okay, can you stay? It's so powerful. It's like three little words, but it always makes me love you and hate you at the same time.
Well, thank you for both. I think it comes from where would I be? Because I practice. So I feel like I can relate to where you are in these poses, especially when we do sit in them for longer periods of time. And it's always a question for me. Can you stay? Because you're right. You can stay, but you don't want to. And that's the difference between, yes, your body can stay. Your mind is saying, I don't want to do this anymore. And what we're really trying to do in this practice is, yeah, the flexibility, the muscle strength, that's all great. But what we're doing by holding Warrior Two is we're trying to get this muscle of concentration here to come in to play and stop saying, get me out of here, get me out of here, get me out of here. So yeah, can you stay? It's really a question because I never want anyone to feel like they have to stay. I never want them pressured to stay. I want them to investigate within themselves. Can you stay? Because if you can, then do.
And you know, 80% of the time when you ask the question, it turns out the answer is yes.
The answer is yes. Or when you say, can you go an inch deeper? Why, yes, you actually can for two more breaths. You can do this. So for me, it's always a question of inquiry. Can you? And then you need to tap in and say, well, yeah, I actually can because I know I'm not here for the next half hour. I'm here for, you know, eight more breaths and I have this physical strength. And guess what? Now I have this mental strength to put into it as well. And so, yeah. And I always want people to have that option though. So that's why it's always posed as a question.
Can you? And then knowing that if you cannot and or even if you choose not to, there's no judgment. It's not like you went and wrote down in your little notebook, like, oh, Megan really didn't pull it off tonight. You know,
exactly. And, and like you said, it may be that you actually cannot, or it may be that you just don't want to. And the whole purpose is honor where you are today, because then that's yours to investigate. Why didn't I want to?
Right.
You know, that's yours to hold on to. And you're exactly right. And honestly, it's not just me not keeping track of it, but it's the people around you because everybody is so focused. They really don't know what's happening next to them unless they're actually looking because maybe they're not familiar with the pose. So they're going to look at you to check in. But other than that, everybody is going more internal and less external. So
yeah,
it's all about you. Yep.
Okay. Well, then I've got my other question for you that has been a thing that in your classes I've really noticed. You really love Warrior Two. And let me...
Oh, I do.
Okay.
I do.
So here's the thing about Warrior Two. Usually by the first time, I couldn't even tell you at what minute of the class we typically get to it, but it's not the very beginning. I'm just like kind of like playing this out for someone who's maybe not as familiar with like a vinyasa style class. It's probably like 12 to 15 minutes in that we're first getting into this. So you're just getting tired. Like you're just getting energized, but also maybe your muscles are starting to get a little bit weary or like you're starting to really feel, as you all like to say, the heat, which I like to sometimes thinks of as like the torture. But so here you are. And then you're going to have us do this thing where you're like doing a deep bend in the front knee, straight body, arms extended, you're like looking down over one of your arms. And the thing is, I used to think that was all there was to it. Turns out, no, you can always get your hip bent. You can always make it more like you're standing between two panes of glass. Like there's so many ways to mess with that pose. And you just love having us hang out there.
And that's why I love it, because there's so much that you can get from it. And that's one of the things for me personally when I'm practicing it. And don't get me wrong, when I'm in that hold as a practitioner, I'm feeling the same things and thinking, okay, how much longer can I actually hold my arms up here? But the thing I've always loved about it is there is always more. You can always tap into something more. And I know it's like that with all of the poses. There's always more for you, but there's something about that pose in particular that's always resonated with me. And just recently, like just even this week, I've realized for myself, I have a hip flexibility that allows my hips to be level with my foot parallel, my right foot parallel or my back foot parallel. But not everybody does. So even with me as a teacher, I'm like, you know what? Why can't they turn their toes in a little bit? Mm-hmm. Why can't they level out their hips a little bit? What does that feel like for them? They can still draw the hip in. They can still get deep in the knee. So even as a teacher and a practitioner who's taught and practiced this over and over and over, I'm still finding new things. And I mean, I'll be the first to admit, when I started teacher training, I was a yoga purist. Everything should be like this because this is the way it looks in the book and this is the way I learned it and this is the way you should all do it. And now even, you know, into my teaching, I'm realizing, okay, there's no rule that we can't do this with our foot, or we can't do this with our hips or whatever. As long as we're energetically feeling this from the root up, you know, and as long as we're all safe in our physical bodies, the way they're shaped. So yes, I would have to say hands down, my favorite pose to teach, my favorite pose to practice, because I think for me, as soon as I get to the top, I can go all the way to the bottom and say, oh yeah, I can do this now. And then I get a whole new feeling through my body, physically, through my energy. I can create more space, which for me, it's all about the space. How much space can you create so that your energy can be even bigger?
And I think that, I mean, it's a great example. Like, there's no such thing as perfect anyway, but this one is one where in particular, there's always something to work on. And so if you can like let go of the idea you'll ever get it and then it'll just be done, then that's freeing.
Exactly. And I don't know how other people feel about it, but I love it. If I'm in a class and Brooke calls me out and says, you can go deeper into your knee, and, you know, because she knows me and she knows right. I can, and I may not even realize I'm backing off until she calls it out. And it's like, oh yeah, I can. So I love being in that pose. I love giving the cue so that people can say, oh, that's right. My foot's lifting. I need to press this back down as much as I can. Or, oh yeah, I'm not engaging this leg at all. And that's why it's so hard. And that just made it easier. So yeah, I love it. It's my favorite pose.
Well, I've noticed, but I like, I would say I have a strong like for it. So that's
good.
There you go.
Good.
Well, Lisa, we need to wrap up in a minute, but I mean, no conversation in 2021 would be complete without us at least mentioning in a passing manner COVID and how much it's changed, yes. like literally everything. So
yes,
I would just love to briefly talk about through the yoga lens, what's been so challenging over the last year for you, if there's been like any blessings in disguise, and then what do you think is going to happen now with the yoga community? What changes might stick? I've really seen so much adaptation and quick adaptation. I've been very impressed actually with how nimbly at least your studio moved to teaching more online. And I just want to hear the whole, like, if you could just wrap up COVID in like a 3-minute, you know, a 3-minute dissertation.
So I actually taught the last class last March 2020. When I walked in and Brooke said, we're closing the doors, you need to make the announcement after class. And she took that class. And at the time I was playing music in, you know, just as we go into Shavasana, and I played the song that I had planned, not realizing that it was the last class. And it was just really about, you know, breathing and slowing down and taking your time. And I know I was crying during Shavasana. She was crying during Shavasana. I think everybody kind of felt this coming. And then the doors were closed. And we were all like, well, this will be, you know, at that time, March, we were all like 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh. I was just thinking about that. We were so optimistic. Yeah. It was so cute.
Yes. Yes. We were all like 3 weeks and everything will get back to normal and this will blow over and we'll all be good. And of course that didn't happen. And for us, I mean, Brooke has been an incredible leader in getting us, you know, keeping things moving, keeping our community connected. But I feel like it's been okay, who wants to teach on Zoom? I'll try it. It was a disaster for me the first few classes. I felt so disconnected. I didn't know, should I look at the screen? Should I demo? What should I do? I can't hear anybody breathe. I don't really understand Zoom. But we learned it. So that was great. And then, you know, time passes and, oh, we can open the studio again. Okay, let's go back into the studio. I don't really remember how to teach real bodies anymore because I've been doing it on Zoom for so long. So we relearned it. And then, okay, we're closing down again. We're going to do all virtual in a different way. And the setup was completely different and we learned it again. And of course, now we're doing the hybrids. And so I think for us as teachers, it's really been learning it all over again every step of the way. And I think for students as well, I think it's been learning how to, you know, how do you get motivated to do a home practice when you don't have to be accountable to drive into a studio and put your time in? And luckily, I think that we have such a great community and everybody has really stepped up and stayed committed. And for the future, I think this is the future. The future is right now. I don't see us ever not having virtual offerings again. I think that's here to stay. I think people are now, you know, they're into it. They've created their space at home. They like having that option. But I'm definitely looking forward. I was practicing at one of Brooke's classes last week, and there were four of us in the studio. And I thought, I cannot wait to have more bodies in motion in this studio the virtual, I think that, you know, I thank you for the compliment. I think it's really, she's done a wonderful job of getting us all in line, and it's a great experience, but there's nothing like, you know, those bodies being together, sharing that breath. And so I hope that that comes back. I would optimistically, I'm thinking fall before everybody really feels comfortable doing that again.
Yeah. And in the meantime, it is great to have, I mean, I do see there are some benefits of the home. I love that the home practice has become so normalized. That's what I think is so great about it. Like now it's no big thing. Like we can just all jump on our mats and put on our Zoom. But yeah, we all miss that. And I think the bigger thing, the takeaway from the whirlwind experience you've just shared is that this, like, you know, the whole theme of this show is reinvention and tapping into that ability to change and to do hard things. And you didn't do it all at once. Like you did something and it changed again. And then you adjusted to that and then it changed again. Like life keeps you on your toes.
Which is life. Exactly.
Exactly. Yep. And so that's just like a very macro. This last year has been a very extreme example of the changes we're all going through all the time anyway, that we don't even notice. It's like, but
you're absolutely right. Yes. That's a great way to put it. It's just been really intensified. It's always there.
Right.
It's just more intense now.
Yeah. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for being on the show with me today. I have loved hearing your experience. It's been great to kind of get a little look at the life behind my instructor. It turns out you do leave the mat. You don't sleep there.
Okay. I've often said, I wish we could all just live here together, but so far we don't.
So far that hasn't worked out. Well, it's been great. No. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. And I hope you have a fantastic afternoon.
Thank you for having me, Megan. It's been fun.
Well, thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Mother of Reinvention. Like always, everything from today's episode will be in the show notes at motherofreinventionshow.com. Again, don't forget to check out PrepDish. And for a free 2-week trial, go to prepdish.com/more. That's M-O-R. Again, just head to prepdish.com/M-O-R, more, to try PrepDish free for 2 weeks. And if you're loving this show, I would be so grateful if you'd leave me a rating and review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It really does help the show so much. Okay, I'll talk to you next Thursday with another episode of the Mother of Reinvention Show.